The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 11th of March, and welcome aboard to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show. And as always, we're going to keep you informed and entertained for the next 2 hours. Thank you so much for choosing us. And make sure you stay involved with the programme. We have hundreds and hundreds of texts and messages and calls every single day, and new people texting in all the time, along with regulars, and we want your views. If you've never texted in a radio show before, there's nothing to it, you know. Your opinion, your view, whatever you want to talk about, is as important as what anybody else wants to talk about or what they have to say. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000, and many of you choose to email, that's comments at highlandradio.com. and if you want to watch the show, you can do that too. It has subtitles as well, so maybe you struggle to listen to the radio. It's not as easy as it was once before. Well, you can follow everything that's happening across the Northwest and beyond by watching the show on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. So that means you can watch it on your big TV, your smart TV, if you've got a Fire Stick. Most people seem to have them now, according to Sky, or indeed across your mobile devices. And we're on our Facebook pages as well. Let's go to the papers. The Finn Valley Voice. Councillors in the Lifford Stranorlar Municipal District have called for urgent action on what they described as a dangerous stretch of road in St Johnstone following a fatal collision last month. Two young men from Derry, Daniel Cullen and Keeveen Porter McLoone, died when the car they were travelling in collided with a lorry on the R236. The issue was raised at a meeting of the Lifford Stranorlar MD, where councillors highlighted long-standing safety concerns about the road and the locals in that area. And we covered this extensively at the time. And we have actually in the past, even before that very tragic fatal collision, local people have been saying this is a death trap. This is incredibly dangerous. This is what we see every single day. We were chatting to a gentleman who owns a local garage, and he's pulling cars left, right and centre, quite literally. They know what the problem is. It's a corner, there's a curb, and cars go in there really quite quickly. And it's just something that needs to be addressed. And there was forewarning as well too, which means it's extra important, I think, that something is done just as soon as is possible. The Irish Independent, and I'm sorry to ruin your morning if you're in good spirits, but stay in good spirits. But you know, if something happens bad, we seem to get the worst of it, don't we? And Ireland has experienced the largest increase in the price of home heating oil in the EU, new figures show. The rise here has been 8 times the EU average, figures obtained by Dublin MEP Lynn Boylan show. Home heating oil prices jumped by 27.3% here last week, compared with an average of 3.3% across the 27 EU member states. Ireland is an unusual case in Europe, as we use kerosene for heating oil, unlike the rest of Europe, which uses less expensive diesel for heating oil. A version of kerosene is also used as fuel for jets. The latest data shows that the price of home heating oil in Ireland jumped from 96 cent a litre on February 23rd to 123 a litre by March 2nd, a rise of 27.3%. But, you know, there has been peaks in the price of oil, but also there have been troughs. And the Brent crude oil, which we use now, we use most of, is 3.4% higher than when the United States and Israel decided to bomb Iran. 3.4%. Now, the prices are much greater than 3.4%. So we're getting shafted, and we're getting shafted so the big boys don't lose money. It's not so much the forecourt, it's who they buy the fuel off. The WTI crude, that's the American crude prices, they're up less than 1%. So the barrel of oil now is only 3.4% higher this morning than it was the day before the war in the Middle East. But we'll never, those prices, how long is it going to take for them to come down? Now, I know things might fluctuate up and down, but, you know, why are we always taking the hit on when they're going up? And just staying with that, just in relation to the price of a barrel of oil. So on February 28th, before the Iran conflict, it was $82 a barrel. And our petrol diesel average, sorry, our average petrol price was $1.74. On March 9th, the peak, it was $1.20 a barrel. and the price at the pump was $1.94, so that had gone up 20 cents. Now, today it's back down to $87.50 for a barrel of oil, but the price remains stubbornly high. And it's also the companies don't lose money. They want to be able to replenish their stocks. But we're the ones picking up the tab, and nothing seems to be done about it. And it, on and on it goes. And we even have Micheál Martin standing nodding with us as if to say, my God, this is terrible, isn't it? Prices shouldn't be going up like this. You're the Taoiseach, for crying out loud. You know, you're not one of us. Well, you are one of us, don't get me wrong, but you are the Taoiseach. So, you know, what are you going to do about it? And I don't care if aliens were in charge of the country, Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. It doesn't matter to me. It's nothing to do with politics, right? But we are banjaxed. And the closer you are, the closer you are to just getting by, which is an awful lot of people, the closer you are to just getting by, the bigger the impact this type of stuff has on you. There are quite a few people who have a bit of a buffer, you know, between the money coming in and the money going out. But there's so many people don't have that buffer. And now they're faced with a massive increase in the cost of home heating oil. Inexplicable increase, it has to be said. The only reason that increase is there is because the big boys are hedging their bets. It's not your local guy that's shafting you on this one. It's the people that are buying the oil off and the cost that they might, your local oil guy might have to pay to replenish his tanks or her tanks, right? The petrol stations, they've got about 3 or 5 days of petrol and diesel in the tanks under their forecourt. They're price takers as well. They might insulate themselves a little bit, but it's people further up the chain that are making the big buckaroos. The biggest gouger, if you want to call it gouging, is the state, because they're taking 60 to 65% circa from the €2.05 you're paying for diesel. You know, the VAT fluctuates. That's not a big deal, but surely we should have a mechanism in times like this. This is a global crisis. Surely we should have a mechanism that the petrol and diesel tops out at 190, say, you know, so that the government takes less carbon tax or less whatever the other taxes they have. I gave you a list of those taxes. You know, 190 is still too high, but something, because we're so reliant on cars, we don't have any alternative. We don't have piped gas. Not that gas is cheap, but we don't have piped gas. We don't have a Lewis or a train, or, you know, the buses are decent, but you know what I'm on about. The local link's doing great work, but I'm on about, for the majority of us getting to, from work, out and about, it's just simply not there. So we don't need a Taoiseach for observation and sympathy. We need a government that says, right, you know, there's a lot of people in this country that are very, 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 very tight on cash. And we have the reserves there. All we have to do is take less tax. We don't have to dig into the savings. We just take less tax for a time. Wouldn't that be a logical thing to do? Especially seeing as, maybe it's because of our location, that we are more susceptible to these price increases. But the bottom line is, oil now is just 3.4% higher, the source material, 3.4% higher than it was when the United States and Israel launched their attack on Iran. Yet the prices are, well, you can see where the prices are yourself. But what's going on in the Middle East? We'll go to the Irish Times. The United States and Israel attacked Iran yesterday with what the Pentagon and Iranians on the ground said were the most intensive airstrikes of the war, despite global markets betting that the US President Donald Trump will end the conflict. That's what drove some of the oil prices down. Raising the stakes for the global economy, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said it would block oil shipments from the Gulf unless US and Israel attacks ceased. A spokesperson for the Revolutionary Guards said Tehran would not allow 1 litre of Middle Eastern oil to reach the US or its allies while attacks continue. We are the ones who will determine the end of the war, the spokesperson said. But the White House reiterated Trump's threat to hit Iran hard if it tries to stop the flow of energy supplies through the Strait of Hormuz. But still, we're feeling the impacts of those threats. We're not necessarily feeling the impacts of it actually happening. Now, I do recognise that there are potential supply issues, but the organisation that holds massive reserves of oil is releasing millions upon millions of barrels of oil, But again, to whose benefit, it won't be to ours. And I'm sorry if I sound like a scratched record, but it's so critical. This must have been a horrible experience for this lady in Britain. It's in the Irish Daily Mail. An Irish bookkeeper who was repeatedly called a potato by her boss has won more than £23,500 after a UK tribunal ruled that she was racially harassed at work. Bernadette Hayes was subjected to a barrage of taunts over her heritage while working for engineering firm West Leeds Civils. And Employment Tribunal ruled. Ms. Hayes was also branded a paddy and a pikey by the company director. This was her boss, the head guy. His name's Mick Atkins, and said she was accused of lusting after the travellers outside the office. She said Mr. Atkins' remarks left her feeling small, insecure, violated, and extremely anxious. Yeah, I got a lot of this. I know to many people's ears here, I have an English twang to my accent. I don't really know why, because I worked in England for 3 years and I lived there for two as a toddler. But anyway, here we are at this age with this accent. But when I was in, when I worked in England for a time in my early 20s, they obviously determined I had an Irish accent. And you got all of that Paddy, Mick, you know, potato and all of that type of stuff. And a lot of that also, what I noticed, funny enough, is it wasn't just from white people over there. People of other colours too were using those types of slurs. Enoch Burke's back in the papers today, and I read this because I know quite a few of you talk about this at home or do follow with interest. Teacher Enoch Burke has said moving him from a Dublin prison to one in County Roscommon has no basis in law. The evangelical Christian from County Mayo was moved. Can you imagine if this says the Muslim from New York or the, attributing someone's religion as their description? You wouldn't do it for any other religion, or the Protestant from Armagh or the Protestant from Derry or wherever it might be. But anyway, the evangelical Christian from County Mayo, as is described, was moved from Mountjoy to Castlereagh Jail on March 1st. He appeared before the High Court yesterday to argue that his transfer should not be allowed as its detention was based on a civil rather than the criminal matter. Mr. Burke said his family have appeared in court multiple times in recent years in relation to a dispute with the Board of Management of Wilson's Hospital School, where he worked, and he's challenged several aspects of the dispute in the courts and has been in prison since January for contempt of court. But he's been moved to Castlereagh Prison. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Joey Barton as a footballer, but after that, he's kind of lost the plot a little bit. I mean, some people might agree with what he had to say, but yesterday he was ordered to pay a former female footballer €390,000. Footy pundit Enola Aluko was yesterday awarded £339,000 libel damages from Joey Barton. He'd made all kind of accusations against her in a tirade on X. But anyway, that was while he was appearing in court for the assault, the alleged assault of a man at a golf club. And the fellow was left potentially blinded or is visually impaired. Barton, who's out, who is on, what do you call it, probation. Not on probation, it's when you release, but if you re-arrest, you can go back in. Anyway, on licence. He's in prison now to April 7th as he awaits news as to what charges he may face in relation to that serious assault, alleged assault, at a golf course in England. So yesterday, a very bad day, and to be honest with you, not the nicest fellow. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. We're joined on the programme now by Harrison Rossiter-Maguire, who's Regional Liaison and Support Officer with the Irish Second Level Students' Union. Good morning, Harrison.
Morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. Right, now, the Irish Second Level Students' Union has released a report, and it reveals that a quarter of all minority ethnic students said they experienced racism at least once a month, and most of those students experienced it once a week or more. So tell us more about the findings of this report.
So this report, it aims to kind of bring to light the levels of racism that are present in schools, because up to this point, most of the evidence has been quite anecdotal and kind of smaller scale studies. And what came to light with this report is the level and the prevalence of racism but also that most students will not report racism in their schools because they feel that nothing will be done, or that in fact the situation will get worse.
And are we hearing the full story too in terms of the reporting of racist incidences in schools? Because it's not an easy thing in a school environment to, you know, tell on someone.
It's not. And when we were collecting data for this report, Bellegado, the officer who commissioned the report back in 2023, actually went the length and breadth of the country, two different schools, promoting this survey, which was conducted by ourselves. So the schools actually weren't involved in the collection of data.
And do you think the underreporting can be addressed, i.e., if schools, and the thing I know about schools, some schools do stuff really well and some schools do stuff really badly, and then we end up with an average somewhere in the middle, right? But do you think schools have pathways for reporting, you know what I mean, so that students can raise any concerns they might have with, you know, mitigation against reprisal?
Yeah, so that is one of the kind of problems, is the inconsistency between schools. And so at the moment, every school by the department is required to have an anti-bullying policy. But what we want to see happen is that every school also be required to have an anti-racism policy, and actually teacher receive training on how to deal with these issues when they receive reports, to stop racism in its tracks, because it has no place in our schools or in society in general.
Yeah, you know, to some extent we're going backwards now. If you look at social media now, there's phraseology, profiling, words and slurs that are commonplace. In the past, you would have got banned for using them. With that in mind, is enough being done in schools to try and counter that? You know, whether it's designed to hurt, or maybe even in some cases casual language that people might not realise is as offensive as it is.
So at present, you know, it's shown in the report there is not enough being done, and, you know, we do need more. And there's a number of kind of actions called out for throughout the report. Now, I'm not going to go through them all. The report is 48 pages long, and we don't have that much time. But, like, some of the other things we were looking at was kind of statutory recording by schools. So if someone reports a racist incident to the school has to record that. And like it was done in various different countries in the world at the moment, for example, Canada, different countries in the UK. So therefore, we can have an ongoing metric to kind of see, oh, is racism, you know, are we making progress? And if not, we can then look at, well, how do we change this? Do we bring in statutory training for teachers? Do we need more counseling guidance services? Is it just better curriculums?
Yeah, and you know, such is the world nowadays, people might, you know, not really take this story as seriously as they should. What this is about is just students, fellow students, the same as everybody else, just wanting to go to school and learn without being subjected to name-calling. You know, it could be because someone was overweight, underweight, in a wheelchair, whatever it might be. Everybody should be entitled to go to school and not be profiled because of how they look, how they move around, or their ethnicity. Do you know? Sometimes nowadays, if people raise this issue, you know, they become a lightning rod for even more abuse. And I don't think we want to live in a country like that. We want to live in a country where young people can get on with their lives and do so with no abuse.
Exactly. Yeah, and kind of touched on what you were saying there. That was raised through the report, through our kind of interactions with students, that there was that could be, in some cases, backlash. And throughout the report, there's been a number of kind of quotes, and one of them was, there was a student who was the only student not of Irish ethnicity in school who was actually told, well, we're not going to do anything about this because it's affecting no one else, you're just too sensitive. But they're really missing the point there, because, you know, everyone is going to be racist from a different light, and someone who's the target of it is going to see it very differently to someone who's not actively being affected by it.
Finally, the report captured the impact this has on students, and they might be obvious, but it's no harm us hearing. What are some of those impacts?
So I suppose kind of the biggest impact is you can see students disengaging from schools because if they're subject to this repeated racist abuse, then they're not going to feel safe, they're not going to feel comfortable, and then they're not going to want to go to school. And that, you know, that can have severe long-term impacts, you know, especially where we are today in Ireland. You know, there's so much kind of importance put on, you know, going to school, finishing your exams. And if people don't feel safe in school, they're not going to learn well, and it'll just have a knock-on effect for something that isn't their fault whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I know it shouldn't matter, but many of these students are probably first, second, third generation Irish with a different sort of ethnic background. Okay, Harrison, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it, and it'll be interesting really for schools to have a look at this and see what they can do. I think the better people can get on, regardless of what the differences is for society. Harrison, thank you. That was Harrison Roster Maguire. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Greg, the Watering Cold Daff is off now 3 weeks. Does anyone know what's going on? Right, I was surprised. I'm only hearing about this now. We can look into that for you, of course. But anyone out there, do you have an insight? Let us know. Earthquake, Loretto, Letterkenny, our school. Quake shake recorded a magnitude 6.0 earthquake struck near the island of Capri in southern Italy on March 9th, 2026, just after 11. The epicentre was located about 16 kilometres south-southeast of Sant'Angelo near the Gulf of Naples. The earthquake occurred at an unusually deep depth of 373 kilometres. Okay, fascinating. I didn't hear about this on the news at all, so maybe it didn't really impact on land, so to speak. But I always find it fascinating that our schools here in this region have technology where they can track this stuff all over the world and get to understand it. Hi, Greg. I'm currently in Thailand. The flight was meant to be yesterday and not now to the 19th. I just saw a post that a flight to the 22nd Airlines may offer flight change, so looking like we're stuck and not getting home yet. And I presume they're routed through the Middle East. Don't know who I can contact as I'm almost out of money. I don't qualify for the 2,000 baht a day because we got emails about flight change. So I'm paying for the hotel and asking back home if anyone has any spare money that they could send me. But it's leaving me worse because when I get home eventually, I'll have to pay all I borrow back, of course, and miss bills to pay money I borrow back. So I'm leaving myself in more debt than I ever was in. I don't know if anyone here can offer any advice in relation to that. Have you contacted the Irish Embassy? Because you are a Irish citizen and you are stranded abroad. So I hope you've contacted the Irish Embassy, be it there or wherever it might be. I see some airlines suspending flights into the medium long term into the Middle East. So I don't know what's going on there. Staying with the Middle East, because so many of you texted in, and I do want to get to a couple of these before the break. Yes, Greg, I agree with your listener who says Trump wants the war to stop now, but Israel wants to fight on. Trump's attention span is short. He's bored now after 10 days. He has plans like English King visited next month and celebrations of 250 years of independence. So he wants no more body bags of young soldiers coming home, which he saluted wearing a silly white baseball cap. The World Cup's a biggie as well for the United States, because if this rumbles on, it's not fantastic for that. Hi, Greg. Filling station charging €2.14 a litre. How is that justified? Well, I mentioned earlier on. On about global warming, pollution, etc. Sure, to go with all these war bombs, planes and oil refineries are plummeting into the skies, are doing a lot of harm and no word of it. Instead, squeeze the ones that are struggling that can't pay the bills. Yeah, listen, you know, the world's burning. You know, the world is burning and we need a break. We need a break from these excessive costs. All right. Now we are joined in studio by two guests, Alva Dunn, Principal of Little Angels School, Letterkenny. Good morning, Alva. Thank you so much for calling up. Really appreciate it. And a more regular voice on this programme, Leonard Watson, who's a parent of a student at the school.
Good morning.
Right, a big day yesterday. In fact, there's a big move on really at Little Angels, mm-hmm. and we'll get into some of the stuff that's coming down the line in the not too distant future. But Alva, from your perspective, yesterday the official launch of the brand new sensory room and its significance.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the important thing to start out with is to say a huge thanks to PGIM.
Shane Grant is the our link with PGIM, and Shane came to the school to visit us just before Christmas, and he had a walk around, he met us, he met some of the kids, he had a chat with us, and he realised that we needed help. So he offered to go back to his colleague Robin, who is... What would Robin's role be? Robin's from New Jersey.
She's the head of the company, probably.
She might be the head of the company. I know Robin has... She's a very important person, so we were delighted to have her with us yesterday.
She'd be okay for a sub.
Well, she would, yeah. But he went back and had a chat with Robin, and Robin trusts Greg implicitly. Not Greg, sorry, Shane, implicitly. And she said, Shane, if you think this is important, then you go for it. So he did. And he worked together with our CDNT team. The CDNT team, you'll know, is the Children's Disability Network team. And we have the Rolls-Royce service in our school. We have an OT, physio, speech and language therapist, and a social worker, which we share with St. Bernadette's. And Donegal are, you know, if there's a Sam Maguire to be won in terms of CDNT, Donegal have won it. And there's... We should be the model for the country. And I know Leonard has talked about this repeatedly, but working with the girls, Shane actually kitted out our sensory room.
Now, of course, this is a brand new purpose-built facility.
Yeah.
A sensory room aren't necessarily part of a campus on the plans, are they?
Or yes, it is.
So how come we had to sort of seek private funding to get it over the line?
Okay,
is it just to speed it up or...?
No, the first thing to say, I suppose, is, and it's not a secret in the town, you know, our school was designed a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been principal of the school since 2018. And at that time, we were already at the point where the school had been designed, the design had been agreed, and we were just waiting on the builders to like the tendering process had happened. No, we went to tender at that stage. But it took an awful long time to get the school built.
Yeah.
So because the school was designed a long time ago, we didn't have any flexibility in relation to changing the design or changing anything about it. So that was the design, and there was a sensory room in the school, but the school gets €7,000 funding to kit that out. So that wouldn't kit out.
I get you. That makes sense.
That would just cover a cupboard,
you
really.
You could almost call it public-private partnership or something along those lines. Not in official terms, because this was some gesture. I'll come back to you in a moment. So, Leonard, from a parent's perspective then, what is the significance of the sensory room? Because it is for students with either moderate, profound or severe learning disabilities. Yeah. How does it help them, and what's the long-term and short-term benefits?
Yeah, well, you know, Greg, me and Al were just chatting this morning. You know, this school is unique in some ways. Like, there's only, what you say, about 120 special schools in the country. But kids come in here at maybe the age of 4 and they stay to the age of 18. So over that time, you know, things change. Like, and I can only speak for my own son. Like Cody would have a huge sensory need. Like, you know, he needs squeezing out there. Like, and but also it benefits the teachers at school. It benefits us at home. Like, you know, the CDNT team, Alva said, it's a game changer. Like we are very lucky up here. We're only one of two school groupings in the country, but this has been huge. I can only speak. Like, you have children in there who are going out to get therapies. The therapies, they were going into different rooms. It wasn't working. They're now getting therapies in a classroom setting where they don't even realise they're getting therapies. The teachers are getting educated alongside. But this really works. And this should be, as Alva said, this should be the Rolls-Royce. This is what should be happening now. But again, there's talk down the road that we could lose this. No, not today or tomorrow, but that's our fight now. We need to keep this in the school life, because...
Rather than losing it here, make it the norm across the
country. Well, Greg, do you know what? We are going to have a recession sometime. And the last time we had a recession, special needs was the first to take the hit. Like, you know, there was SNAs were cut, the therapists were not being hired. Like, so we cannot get back to that situation where the people that need it the most are hurt. Like, you know, and like Alva's right about that grant. If we were a national school with one class ASD unit, we're getting €7,000. We're a 25 classroom school. And we're getting €7,000. Like, and even there, I broke it down. Like, that's €300 per class. One of them elephant bean bags is over €200. Like, you know, and with the children in the school, the equipment doesn't last as long. Like, you know, so the school needs more. Like, I was saying the Alvis morning, we need 3 or 4 therapy rooms. Like, we have 143 kids in there and we have 1 therapy room. Like, and you are right, the state should be providing more. Like, you know, this is a school with children with the most profound needs, and they're probably getting the least per head of population now.
Yeah. So in a day-to-day situation, Alva, the sensory room, how does it benefit students and the school as a whole?
I'd love you to actually see it in action, you know, and it was beautiful yesterday.
Because you need to sort of be there to witness it more than describe it.
Well, I can tell you the impact of it, but it's seeing it is it really brings it home to you.
It's emotional, actually, Greg. Do you know what? Those people actually from PGM yesterday were actually a wee bit emotional. Yeah. You know, to see the difference this is going to make to children.
So what it does really is, like, to give you a real life example, I had a meeting with parents last week whose little boy is in the school, and I'm not going to get into the CALMS conversation, but he really needs to be with CALMS and he isn't. And mum and dad came in and they said, you know, Ava, it's really tough because when he gets home, he's in complete dysregulation. So when we, throughout the conversation, what we've realised is that he's probably holding it in all day at school because he's great at school. But when he goes home, then he lets it out. And per mum and dad have to bear the brunt of that. So what we've introduced a few changes for him, but one of those changes is to make sure that he's as regulated as he can be before he goes home. And that would be where the sensory room would come in.
That's an interesting example between the thought and the relationship between the school day and the evening day.
I mean, like Leonard will know that when I came to the school in 2018, we had 17 teachers and with 17 classes and we had 103 kids. So we didn't get, like, we had a lot more space. And what I mean by that space is that we've flexibility. So if there's 4, like the ratio, the CERC ratio, which by the way hasn't been reviewed since the 1990s and is very out of date, that ratio states that there's 6 kids to 1 teacher. But if you've 6 kids in a class, and like as I said yesterday, or kids with autism have sensory needs, so I might not like the smell of the washing powder that your mum uses. And so when you come in and you've got a freshly laundered T-shirt on or a freshly laundered school uniform, I'm going, get away from me, please. I can't be near you. And because we're jam-packed, we don't have the flexibility to create the spaces between those children. So years ago, we would have had the flexibility to say, these 4 kids don't get on brilliantly. Let's swap one out and swap one in. But we don't have that flexibility now.
Yeah.
And the problem is, as everybody knows, like our school already, it's too small. So
can I ask you a question about that, Alva? Listen, I mean, obviously you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. It's fantastic that this new facility is there. But obviously it's not future-proofed. In fact, it really wasn't present-proofed by the time it was built. Is this going to be an onward struggle, Alva, or is there options down the line to try and, you know, make this great facility?
The Department of Education are looking at options. Yeah. They are looking at options, and they are, you know, I think that the levels of the rise in special ed, I mean, there is definitely we're seeing a huge increase in the numbers that are applying, not locally, nationally, and it's more than the obvious things. You know, people will say, children are being diagnosed more than they were. That's not the case, because our children were never going to be missed, the children who attend our school. So there is definitely a rise. And the department need to react to that. They are looking at options, and the options would include increasing our school. So giving us more capacity, maybe building an extension or, you know, but then there are huge issues around that, as in they have to get the right piece of land to do it on, which currently belongs to the HSE. So there would be there'd be issues there. But also, you know, some of our children are travelling from Carindonagh, from Malinhead, from
Killybegs, Dunlow.
So is there is it right to have all the facilities in the one time?
No, probably not. Yeah, no. Exactly.
Should there be a special school elsewhere? Yeah. So that's another option.
Mm-hmm.
But those options
there's all
are,
catchment area, arguably, or two, potentially where you could that would make sense.
That needs to be explored.
And I think really what's critical in all of this is the disadvantage you might have is that whilst the number of students we're talking of is great in number, compared to the school population, it's a very small number. And that's why parents and those that advocate have to be so noisy, because it'd be very easy for these kids to be forgotten.
Unfortunately, Greg, that's a problem for us, because we're also only 120 schools. So that's only 120 special school principals. Yeah. And we're very small. We're a really small cohort of principals. We don't get heard at all. So,
and people will say, sure, look at what else do you want? You know, because there's a lack of understanding sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's true,
But what I suppose what I'm saying is that we've actually, the special school principals in the country have come together. We've set up a new organisation and we're called NASP, which is the National Association of Special School Principals, because we're not getting a seat at the table.
No.
So when we don't get a seat at the table and we're not heard, then the department don't have, you know, they're not hearing, oh, by the way, one sensory room in the special school isn't enough.
Yeah, and it's being outside the room or away from that table trying to make the noise. Yeah. I get where you're coming from. On a positive, the school Little Angels is on track to become the first primary school in Donegal, and probably the first of many under the patronage of Donegal ETB, hopefully by the next term. So the significance of that, Alva?
Is huge. It's really, really huge. So just to give you like a... From my own point of view as the principal of the school, like currently, I'm the person who's responsible for everything. So that includes buildings, that includes HR, that includes finance, that includes everything right down to teaching and learning. And you know, if you've 100 staff, like I always think, you know, if you had a small company with 100 people in it, you'd have a HR manager. Yeah. So like. So
the backroom boring bits, the Donegal ETB one.
Yeah. Right, okay.
And those are the bits that, like, it's I won't know myself, you know. Like,
well, frees up your resources and other staff's resources to look after.
It's going to give us, because the bit that we struggle, and I'm not talking exclusively about myself here, this is every single principal in the country, every single, you know, national school principal, it's the same thing, where we... should be, our focus should be on teaching and learning, and that should be where we're at. We should be, our main focus should be the kids, but we're being distracted by the fact that we have to deal with the money side of things, the building side of things, the HR side of things. So, you know, we're going to have a huge amount of help from the ETB in relation to that, and it's just going to the knock-on effect of that is going to be that the teaching and learning
it'll
for the
benefit,
kids
of course.
Is going to be,
well,
it's going to be huge.
It just takes a bit of the foot off the neck. Yeah,
absolutely.
Leonard, anything else?
No, Joe, I think...
Just to give a stop, because we haven't spoken in this context for a wee while.
Yeah, Joe, I think Alva brought up the CAMHS thing. You know, that is huge. And as I say, hopefully in the next couple of weeks we will have a CAMHS psychiatrist in place for intellectual disability.
It's short-term, long-term?
Long-term, full-time position. But this actually affects probably most of Little Angels students. Like, most of them would be the ones that need CAMHS the most. But I just want to say too, like Greg, very so grateful to PGM for this here. This all came out of a conversation with myself and Paddy Sheridan in the car, and we did a football match, and I just rolled from that. But I also want to say, like, that same day TCS was up. TCS have done things, and they've give us money to school. Paddy Sheridan, in fairness, he's been out raising money, Dry Arch Complex.
Paddy's one of our SNAs, and you know, we had a staff meeting the other day, and we were talking about leadership and distributed leadership in the school, you know, and I was asking people to identify, you know, leaders, and people struggle to identify themselves as a leader, but I would like to join you in talking about Paddy just to say that he showed true leadership there, and he really is. Like, he's outstanding, and he's apart from everything else, he's just a really nice guy.
Yeah, well, fair play to PGM, fair play to Tata. Yeah. We need to see more of that. Yeah, you
but
know,
and, these, and these are other local, like, individuals within the community. Yeah. You know, we have Bernie Moran from
Wonder Years
has donated amazing piece of kit. It's a soft play centre, and from that down to the likes of Christy,
Fancy and Intensity Fitness, he's done a fundraiser at Dry Arch Complex.
Yeah.
But you know what? I will say, Greg, I know Alva can say, Greg, we have got the best staff up in that. Like, if you'd seen them yesterday with the kids and that, if you'd have seen them last year at the Halloween thing, like, these are people that really care. I always say it's not a career when you go to Little Angels, it's a vocation, because it's tough. You know, listen, these people have tough days' work, but you just see the joy in their faces. Like, you know, yesterday even with the kids when they're Irish dancing, that it's just, it is heartwarming. Like Greg, I say, you know, sometimes you just have to see these things.
You know, well, do you know what? Sometimes you have to hear about it too from parents. Greg, we're blessed to have Little Angels. It is the one wonderful service in the town, despite the poor infrastructure, traffic and lack of transport. Daniel, thanks for the list. But Little Angels is at top. But this from Katrina, which is, this really sums it up for me and answers the question. Both of you did fantastic, don't get me wrong. But Greg, my wee boy has delayed language. And when he went into the sensory room at his school, he was a chatterbox and used language we had never heard before. The teacher in the SNA could not believe it. Sensory space is so important. Great for the young fella, but the feeling mum would have got from that and dad. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's.
But Greg, do you know what? As a parent, some of the things that parents take for granted, we take as huge. You were saying yesterday, but you were seeing kids doing things there.
Yeah.
Like you know, there was that head boy yesterday, what he was doing. You know, the head. You're seeing things happen that are just, they're changing, they're evolving. That's great. Like.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you both very much for calling up. Leonard Watson, a parent of a student at Little Angels School, and the principal of that school is Alva Dunn. Thank you both so much for calling up.
And just a quick shout out, Greg, any companies out there have any money floating around? Contact myself, contact Alva,
huge,
there's no problem.
Huge benefit them. And again, PGM, fair play to them. Tata Consultancy, is that right?
TCS.
Tata Consultancy Services. It's the same company, isn't it?
Don't like being called TAS. TCS.
Do they not?
No, it's TCS.
Right, okay. I'm going to have to check my emails now to see what the story is. I think that's a good move by them, actually. I think that's a good move. Right, TCS.
Yes.
You know, fair play to their generosity. And it's money well spent, because it makes the staff proud. It makes the town proud.
Changing lives, definitely, 100%.
All right, PGM, TCS. All right. Yeah. RTA, until the insurance companies challenge the council on the condition of the roads after a large payout, nothing will change. On oil prices, €907 for 100 litres on the 26th of January, €890 for 500 litres yesterday with the same company. Can anyone explain this? Well, I mean, I've tried my best. It's replacement costs, to be honest with you. They need to buy oil in. And what the can often do is they up the price to the current value of what it would be to buy it in, so that they actually have the money to buy it in when they have to. But it doesn't explain why prices go up so quick but don't come down. We talk about the amount of money taken on taxes, says a listener, from oil and petrol by our government. If it's so big, why are our public service so poor? What is the money being spent on? The public service is very well resourced. The biggest bill in any government organisation is wages and pensions. On oil prices, you see them oil prices. That is the importer and the wholesaler gouging the price. One day last week, the price rose by 16 cents a litre, and another 16 was added on top of that. Yes, indeed. There's a bit of that going on. Insulating their business, gouging, you know, there's a crossover there. And we're joined on the programme now by Deputy Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson. Piers, good morning to you. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning to you, Greg.
Right. Many of us are very focused on the cost of fuel, be it home heating oil, petrol or diesel. Before we get into where the gouging is coming from, do you believe gouging is happening?
I think there's no doubt that we saw gouging, particularly in relation to home heating oil, at the beginning of this crisis. My colleague, Lynn Boylan, has revealed information today that's on the front page of the Irish Independent that shows the price of home heating oil has risen in Ireland 8 times faster than anywhere in Europe. So I think you'd be scratching your head for a long time trying to figure out how that one works, Greg. You know, and like what we've seen is immediately as this crisis unfolded, even when suppliers still had oil in the country, the prices went up overnight, and they didn't go up by a small amount. We see some places charging nearly €900 for 500 litres of oil. That's just extortionate. We've had the representative of the industry talking about how some companies put up the prices to try and dissuade people from buying, which in my view is a nonsense argument, given that if you've no oil in the tank, then you have to buy. And if the company's just putting it up artificially, then that is price gouging. What we're seeing probably in petrol stations is a bit different. These prices are the wholesale prices that they're buying them in from. Now, whether the suppliers are adding on something or other, that's a different issue. But most petrol stations are price takers. And you're seeing differences in the forecourts for a number of reasons. Obviously, forecourts, you know, buy petrol and diesel at different prices. It depends how much volume that they sell, so they get discounts, and that's why there's a bit of discrepancy there. And also it depends what tanks they have in the forecourt. So some, you know, your petrol stations will have tanks maybe with a 2-day storage or a 7-day storage, and it all depends how busy they are and how big the tanks are. So what you're seeing in some cases is like that somebody was on to me this morning saying there's a station with diesel for 207 or 208, and then across the road it's 199. And the answer for that there is they fill their tanks on a different day. And it
but
depends
also, too, in relation to that, you know, we're seeing volume petrol stations now where they're selling in huge volumes compared to a petrol station, or whereby it's part of a wider business and they have to balance the books. And that's fine. But at the same time, though, are we not victims of, and we'll get to the government's taking all of this in a moment, though, are we not victims of these big companies not wanting to take any risk themselves? They're charging us what they predict they might have to pay into the future. Now, I know oil prices are very volatile at the moment, but they're only 3.7% higher today than they were the day before the United States and Israel decided to bomb Iran. So, you know, why should we have to cover, you know, their risk completely, utterly? We take all of the risk, and then they can ride it out when oil prices come down. It's like the feather dropping, right? It takes forever for the prices to come back down again.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about this. When this story is written, eventually you will find that there are people making not millions but billions of euro as a result of this war, and they will be in the fuel industry, the energy industry, and all of that. Indeed, I think the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal had stories in relation to LNG and the operators of it making billions of euro already as a result of this year. So there's going to be winners and losers in relation to this year. And the winners, as we know how the system is and how the game's rigged, is always those big large companies, and the losers are ordinary people. And that's where the responsibility of government is in twofold. One is to make sure that there is no price gouging, to give the proper powers to the regulator to make sure that that isn't happening, and make sure the regulator has teeth. But then separately, nobody's denying that the war in the Middle East has now spiked prices of oil. We know what the Strait of Hormuz, we know the attacks that have happened, we know some of the refineries that have been hit. So there is an issue now.
There is, but
the government needs to step in.
Of course, but I get where you're coming from. But obviously, as soon as Donald Trump said this war would be shorter, the price of oil came down. The reserve, we're seeing millions upon millions of gallons of oil being released from reserves. Right. So I get exactly what you're saying, and we know things are volatile. But at the moment, because don't forget, we get hit as soon as it goes up. At the moment, the price of a barrel of oil is only less than 4% higher than it was before this. And, you know, what? Again, it's not your fault. It's probably not even the government's fault. But why are we on the line, and it seems in Ireland, more on the hook than any other country in Europe?
Yeah, look, you're 100% right. And there are issues in terms of global markets, like what you would have had last night because the barrel of oil dropped. But like it dropped to where it was Friday. Like, so there was a significant drop yesterday, but it was dropped to where it was on Friday. On Friday, we had petrol stations in Donegal charging 209. So it's not like a huge relief to people. Mm-hmm. It just meant that it wasn't going to go up to 220 or 225 when they were refilling their tanks.
Yeah, I know, but there's not one of those barrels of oil at the high price in this country. You know,
no, 100%.
You know, that's my point. Like, so
you're absolutely 100%, yeah. And that's why the suppliers here are making an absolute fortune of that there, because they are pricing in not what they have in stock or what is en route here that hasn't been impacted in the price. It's basically that this the new barrels are going to be hard to get out, and they're going to be more expensive, and they've passed that on. That is the definition of price gouging, and that's happening in the international market. There is absolutely no doubt that that is happening in at that level of the supply chain. The question is what can we do?
Well, that's it, because the biggest proportion of what we spend on petrol and diesel goes to the state. Is it 60-65%? You see different figures on it.
So for petrol, you're talking about, depending on the price of petrol, but if petrol was about 180, you're talking about 65% of the price of petrol goes into the state's coffers. It goes on taxes or other levies.
Very little of that is actually VAT. Well, not very little, but the VAT's 23%, so we know
that. The VAT's 23%. Excise duty make up a significant amount of it. It's about 65 cent on the litre. And then you've got kind of NORA levies and other levies as well, which are like, NORA is about making sure that we have a 90-day reserve of fuel in the country. So so basically, when you add it all up, if you look at it, right, who pays the most and who benefits when you fill your car with petrol and diesel? It's the government that benefits. 65% of it goes to the government. About 2-4% of it goes to the retailer. So usually they're charging anything from 2 cent to about 7 or 8 cent on the litre of diesel or petrol. That's their profit margin. Not their profit margin. That's what the forecourt gets.
That's their take, yeah.
And that has to pay. That pays the staff, the electricity, the running costs, all that, the rates and all that. But that's what they get. And then the supplier, the distributor, the transport and all that gets about 33%. So by far, it is the government that bring in the most amount. And the government are actually increasing that again. They have legislation passed that on the 1st of May, these taxes are going up on home heating oil. They're going up again in October on petrol and diesel, and still even today, despite all the prices that where people are being charged, they're saying that they're not reversing those decisions.
What people listening to this are going to be confused by, firstly, we set we are as far as I'm aware, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, our emission targets are based on this inflated income that we have through corporation tax, that we're told constantly that we can't rely on this because it could be lost. But our targets are based on that. So we have countries that don't have these multinationals of similar sizes, and their targets for 2030 are much lower than ours. Not only that, then we decided we'd actually go, oh, that's not enough. We're going to increase our targets further. A decision was made in Dublin to do that. So this is partly because of the income that we never see, but we're judged on. But also we decided that we'd be extra good boys and add it on. But the truth is we're never going to achieve those anyway. And people are watching the world burn down. People are watching, I don't know, what one of those multi-headed missiles that Israel blasts off, what the impact of that is in terms of, you know, how many tanks of Irish petrol. You know, maybe we shouldn't think like that, but I can't help but think like that, because we've got people blowing the world up and we're being shafted left, right and centre to meet these notional targets for 2030. I understand we have to look about the environment, but that's where we're at, and none of it makes sense.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, when you look at that there, and if you look at the climate, and you see it's the 1%, the top most wealthies in the country, that actually causes most of the pollution. But who's paying the price according to government policies? It's ordinary people. Like, despite all of that, everybody has to do their bit. And, you know,
100%. I'm not a denier.
Yeah, no, I know you're not. And it's very frustrating when you see them, you know, chopping down the rainforest, and then we're importing, you know, Brazilian beef with, you know, that is environmentally damaged from the other side of the world. Like, it's very frustrating when all of that happens. But when you look at the price of petrol and diesel and carbon tax in particular, because this is the government's big thing, that they want to put up the carbon tax on petrol and diesel. And, like, let's call it what it is. So the government have said that they're putting up the price of taxes on petrol and diesel every year out till 2030. And the reason they're doing this is because they want petrol and diesel to cost more. Like, that's the only reason. It's not that they want to bring in more tax for the state, because the state has got loads and loads of taxes. We brought in 12.5 billion more than we used last year. Like, that's billion, 12.5 billion in a simple year. So it's not about that. The government believes that if we increase the price of petrol and diesel, people will drive less.
But that's not true because we're already using, we're driving more than ever.
It's absolutely true. The experiment has failed. It doesn't work. All it does is punish people, particularly in rural areas that don't have public transport. If you put up on public transport, let's look at the local link development in recent years. You will see people use public transport. If you make electric cars and the infrastructure and you make them affordable to people, people will use them. The problem is for most people, like one in four people in the state has savings of less than 500 euro. 320,000 can't pay their electricity bills. So talking to them about moving away from petrol and diesel into a 35 or 40,000 euro electric car is just, you know...
And that's countrywide. I would love to see actually the figures for Donegal specifically. But your party is introducing emergency legislation in the Dáil. What does that look like to cut the cost of petrol, diesel and home heating? Or what is the structure to do that?
Yeah, so look, this is about the failure for government to act. So we're acting. So we produced legislation that the government should be introducing. And what it is it basically reduces the taxes on petrol, diesel and home heating oil. There is a minimum amount of taxes that we have to apply to these things because of Europe, particularly petrol and diesel. So we're compliant with that because we can't change Europe's rules alone. But even with that, it allows us to reduce the cost of petrol and diesel by 25 cents in the pumps and to remove carbon tax completely from home heating oil, which would reduce the cost of home heating oil close to 200 euro per fill. Now, that doesn't still cover the full cost that it's increased. It's increased by, maybe 300 or 400.
How long would that last for, and what might trigger it?
So it's already triggered.
Yeah, okay, but see fluctuation.
Let me answer the question, how long will it last for? And so in terms of triggered, it's already triggered because the prices are so high the way they are. So this would take immediate effect once it was introduced in the Dáil. That's what our proposal is. So we're asking government to support this. The second thing is then there's a review clause built into this legislation, which forces the minister to actually assess market prices of petrol, diesel and home heating oil in the international markets, the price that's been charged at the pumps for these, and also the cost of living pressure. So what that means is, Greg, if the war ended, next week, and within 2 or 3 weeks, because a lot of this infrastructure is damaged, within 2 or 3 weeks that the prices came down reasonably, then the minister could reduce the support that was available or could turn it off completely. Indeed, it goes the other way as well. If prices actually went higher, the government could, in some cases, particularly with petrol, could actually increase the level of support that was there. Our legislation is that it would last for 6 months initially, but again, depending on international markets, that can either be shortened or extended, and the supports can be varied, either reduced or increased.
What about then the consequence of that? Say, for instance, if it does mean that we take longer drives or what have you, right? This is notional. And then we end up with a bigger bill to pay in 2030 when we miss the targets. If we miss the targets more, are we not potentially leaving ourselves with a massive bill down the line?
No, well, look, the issue of missing the targets is completely separate. Like, it's separate from this conversation, because carbon tax isn't going to help you one way or another in relation to this year. There are not people in my constituency that are saying, I'm missing going out with a Sunday drive with the kids. That's
but you know,
not
really, it was a facetious question, because actually, really, this costing doesn't affect our behaviour one shape
no,
or
it does not, and this is about citizens that are already under serious pressure with rising prices and food and groceries and electricity and rent and student fees and all of the things, many of them that government put up themselves. And now on top of this here, the cost of heating your home, and two-thirds of people in Donegal use home heating oil. It's way above what the national average is in terms of home heating oil, because we don't have gas. It's the only county in the 26 that doesn't have gas. So it's really, really important for us that home heating oil is affordable. Petrol and diesel is absolutely crucial in a rural area without proper public transport.
Okay, so finally then, how do you stop then the retailers, wholesalers, whoever it is, saying, okay, there's a little meat on the bone there, I'll have that. So in other words, they set this notional, say, 2 euro a litre or something. How do you stop them trying to pick up that slack that would be there?
You do it by the review clause, you do it by the price gouging legislation, you do it by strengthening the regulator to make sure, because there's serious penalties with price gouging if it was beefed up and tackled. So you do that hand in hand, Greg. Like, we know what the international market price of petrol and diesel is. It can be monitored easily. We're expecting, some prices to go down by about 7 cents overnight, but we expect that to go back up again, because that's where the market is going. So all of this can be done. Look, see, at the end of the day, this is very simple. who's benefiting from the war and the fuel prices going up? There's two people. We talked about it earlier on in the interview. The main big suppliers of energy, of fuel, are going to benefit massively in relation to this year. But the government are also benefiting. The government took in 38 million euro on taxes because these prices have gone up in the last week alone. It is immoral, in my view, that that is happening. And the government are sitting back saying, we're going to monitor this. We're going to sit back. We're going to look at it. They've jetted all over the world for St. Patrick's Day. And people are paying, they're picking up the prices at the pumps and heating their homes. I'm saying to them, you cannot wait. We need a decision. You need to indicate to the people that we are going to reduce taxes. Can this be done? Absolutely. We forced the government to do this during the war in Ukraine. They dithered and dithered during that time, but eventually we got them across the line. Okay, and well, I'm not going to give up like until that, we get them to do the same
thing
this time.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the likes of BP, Maxwell, they made record profits during the worst of the oil increases following the invasion of Ukraine. Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Deputy Pierce Doherty there. Any views in relation to that? 086 60 25,000. The gouging is from government. 65% of the final price is tax. Well, it's actually 65%, not cent. That means that the original product is an increase of 107.5. Get real. €2.13.9 for diesel in Inner Shown this morning. Another, would Pierce guarantee if in government they would reduce VAT to 9% on fuel? He won't. It pays their high wages, etc. Civil servants. When you were discussing the increase in oil prices and where the money's going, Greg said a lot of it's going towards pensions, but I'm in a widow's pension and it's only gone up €10. That is nothing. For years we've asked for it to be increased by 20%. Sorry, for €20, but it still hasn't. I understand where you're coming from. That's not what I said. I think there's two conversations being mixed up. I said that the majority of money going to organisations such as Donegal County Council goes on wages and pensions. It's shocking the amount of planes that are flying over Donegal, many of them US Army planes. What happens if some other country decides to take a shot at our Shannon Airport, which we allow Americans to use as an airbase? Hi, Greg. Was just pricing a night away for Saturday, the May bank holiday for myself and wife. Unreal what they're charging for one night. And they're saying that there are no tourists coming to Ireland. That's why the prices of the hotels. Sorry, so why are the prices of the hotels? You're going on a Saturday in May. It's crazy, but that's lots of other people are doing the same thing. The price at the pump is 65% tax. Surely some of that could be suspended for times of crisis. Exactly what we were talking about there. Good morning, Greg. I was at a filling station on Monday morning and it took a lady 5 minutes to get across the road. It's like the wacky races around 8 a.m. Both ways. Just wanted to highlight it. That's in the St. Johnstone area. As per usual, sounds like parents aren't parenting. Local brat was out hurling racist abuse at a new girl in the estate that my daughter was out playing with the other day. This SH1T starts at home. Maybe we should do something about the blatant racism in the parents and it'll flow downstream. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Report out today says Irish heating oil has risen by 8 times as much as the rest of the EU. Irish prices rose by 27.3% compared to 3.3% in the rest of Europe. Yep, that's true. We use kerosene. Lots of other places don't. Could that be part of it? I don't know. On the St. Patrick's Day visits, is the Taoiseach seriously going out to America with a bowl of shamrocks to get his photo taken when what he should be doing is protesting, boycotting the Trump administration? They have the world economy in tatters and in the Middle East decimated. The rest of European leaders are condemning the war, but not our leaders. They just want to be in the limelight. Micheál Martin says he's going out to raise the price of oil with the American president. Like, he'll listen to Micheál Martin. Well, I suppose it's an opportunity to listen. People have different views on those visits. The one thing is that they will go ahead. So we do this every year. We have the same conversations. And I predicted this in January that whatever the reasons might be, we'll talk about why the visits shouldn't happen. And then we know what the counter arguments are. It's traditional. It's an exclusive meeting. It's an opportunity for this, that and then. The humiliation with Conor McGregor last year or the year before, that would have been enough for me to not bother me backside going. But anyway, maybe there's a duty to the Irish in America to go. Now, you may have heard on the news of plans for a potential miniature railway in the Barnesmore Gap. Donegal Railway Heritage Museum has begun a feasibility study as part of its 2025-2030 strategic plan, which has just been launched. Museum manager Marty Gilroy says they are striving to become one of the Northwest's flagship attractions and community amenities over the coming years. They are ambitious plans, they're bold plans, and the idea of being able to travel on a train through Barnesmore Gap, especially along the old route, very appealing to me. But there are some concerns out there. Mary Casey is founder member of Into the West Rail Lobby Group and currently a member of Donegal's West Ulster Rail Initiative. A lot of work ongoing to try and re-establish rail lines. You would be cautious of these proposals, Mary, perhaps even more?
Yes, we had links with the Donegal Museum, and miniature railways are tourist attractions, as the Fintown Railway is. And linking Fintown with Donegal Town is a potential rail, miniature railway that could happen. But I'm a mainline railway lobby group. In 2002, I and a couple of others, Eamon McCann and Bill Mooney, and we set up the Into the West Railway Lobby Group. And over from 2002, we marched the streets of Belfast and Derry, and we met with government ministers and with civil servants. And it was a minister that travelled by train from Newry that actually signed up on approving infrastructure on the line from Coleraine to Derry. And then we got the passing loop at Bell Arena, and we then were asked, where do you think we should put the halt for the city at the Peace Bridge? And we said, oh, no, there's a perfectly good railway station that Pat Doherty owned. Mm-hmm. And we got the public behind us with petitions. The Department for Infrastructure carried out a public consultation, and they were overwhelmed with responses. Mm-hmm. Now we see the massive change in Letterkenny, because I'm from Donegal, I'm from Buncrana. I come to Letterkenny every week, and we see the change that has happened. My grandfather was a county court clerk with Judge Larkin, and we see the enormous traffic congestion on the Port Road. This morning is just like
just
any other morning.
Just in relation to that, if you don't mind, Mary, and listeners are acutely aware of the traffic issues at the moment. But, you know, the only thing I'm hearing in terms of what might get over the line is a link from Derry Strabane into Letterkenny. There's no talk, it seems, of a rail link into Inishowen like was there before, or indeed what you would be concerned of in the context of this conversation, a link between Letterkenny and Sligo. In fact, all we're hearing is that that will never happen because it would never be viable. Now, you would never give up, of course, do not get me wrong. But can we allow the potential development of a wonderful tourist attraction to not happen when we're campaigning for something that's probably not going to happen either?
No,
right? So it's half a loaf, not better than no bread at all.
We were told in 2002, 2003, 2004 that the line between Coleraine and Derry was lesser used and that it would close. And we said, oh, no, because we are resilient rail lobbyists. And we won the case, and now it is the fastest growth railway line. It's faster than the Belfast to Dublin line in growth in terms of population. It was packed this morning, as the bus from Derry to Letterkenny was packed this morning. And so we are not against a miniature railway, but we're just saying that there's an ATU now in Letterkenny. It's linked in with Sligo and with Galway. And we have a veterinary college been established in Letterkenny. Letterkenny is the capital of Donegal. Mm. It has a growth with the economy growing, people coming to Donegal. And so we need to have the infrastructure.
Oh, we do for
right.
sure. And lots of and I think if you did a referendum of Donegal, it might be 98% in favour of a link between Sligo and Derry. But
yes.
But again, though, this is casting a shadow over these plans. How could a miniature railway running alongside of a greenway, which is going to happen, in any way disrupt plans that don't yet exist for a rail link between Letterkenny and Sligo?
Well, we have plans. All of the groups in the Western Seaboard, the West on Track in Mayo, and West Ulster Rail Initiative in Donegal, and into the West Ruby Lobby Group, we all met with the former Minister for Transport, Shane Ross, in 2017. And he said that it would happen, that it would be cumulative from Limerick to Galway, Galway to Sligo, Sligo to Letterkenny, Letterkenny to Derry. Why will the West not have a railway line that connects?
Oh, we should have one. But my point is how could the establishment of a miniature railway, a tourist attraction alongside a greenway, how would that interfere with those plans if they were to come to pass?
Well, there is an issue in terms of space on the Barnes Gap. There's a river, there's a road, there's then the mountains. And so to have a main line, railway line, which is vital to economic development, economic regeneration, for climate change, for connectivity for students from the different campuses in the ATU.
No, that's the argument for it. Fantastic. I'm
and so you have
you,
to yeah. you have to have a mainline rail line going from Letterkenny through Ballybuffet to Sligo. And then you can say a miniature railway can be connected from Donegal Town to Fintown.
Yes, but my point is I understand what your campaign is, and I endorse it. We'd all love to see a railway.
Good.
My point is how could the establishment of a tourist attraction miniature railway disrupt plans for a multi-billion euro Western Rail Corridor? I can't see how that can happen.
Well, it doesn't actually disrupt because we can work together.
So why then, why the negativity around this exciting tourism proposal?
There is no negativity in relation to rail. One is a tourist attraction, the Heritage Library. The other one is a main line, which is also a tourism.
What has that tourism development got to do with your campaign? Why are we even talking about it?
We are into economic regeneration, economic growth. Mm. We're into getting a main line railway linking Sligo to Letterkenny to Derry. We have a cross-border European status city between Letterkenny and Derry, which was established when John Hume was MP. MEP. And so we want to have that twin city.
Okay, I'll just ask one more
with
time.
Link between Derry and Letterkenny.
How could a miniature railway line, a tourism attraction, interfere with those plans?
The miniature railway line cannot interfere with Barnes Gap. Barnes Gap is.
You can't sit on it.
If we
say. You can't sit on it for generations.
Well, we've got Charlie McConnell behind us. We've got the head of the county council behind us.
Yes, but it's this type of objectionalism that has stopped the development of the A5, then has stopped the development of potentially rail lines. It's this type of.
And the A5.
Squatting, land squatting.
And the A5 is a mainline train.
Mm.
The A5 didn't happen, but a mainline train. Why would we not have an all-island rail network?
100%, it'd be fantastic.
If we've got European funding came in for from Cork to Dublin to Belfast to Larne, and that got the cross-border dimension for the funding that was needed, and they got a second round of funding, what did Donegal get? It got traffic congestion.
But Mary, listen, I'm all for what you do, but I will just say from a campaign perspective, if you were engaging me as a PR person, which you're not...
Well, we can.
No, but my point is this is not in your favour to be opposing this. A, it's only a plan, it might never happen. B, it's very unlikely to interfere with the overall Western Corridor plans. And C, it just feels like negativity and the type of negativity that when you're trying to develop roads and rail infrastructure that stands in their way.
No,
that's all I'm saying.
It's not negativity, because I'm into tourism. I set up a Culmore Tourism and Craft Collective way back in 2016. And so we're not into conflict. We're into working together. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can say that you can have a walkway, a cycle path, and a miniature railway, and a road, and a rail line in Barnes Gap.
Yes, but we don't even know if the new railway, if it were to happen, might follow some of the path of the old rail line, much higher up than this greenway might be.
That's right. Mm. And so therefore there has to be an amount of digging going on. There has to be an amount of infrastructure improvement going on. And so we're here today to push forward the idea, and the West Ulster Rail Initiative was established 20 years ago into the West Railway Lobby Group, was established in 2002, of a mainline rail link to Sligo that connects with Galway.
Yeah, indeed. And listen, you know, right at the end of the lane from my house in Lahey, there used to be a miniature station there.
Yes.
And it's crazy that it's not there now. And I know people that used to get up and on and off it. And we're going back. So I'm not, I hope, and I'm full of praise for what you as a lobby group has achieved, okay? I'm just trying to play devil's advocate in terms of this project. But listen, keep up the good work. There's a lot of people backing you. The only one not backing seems to be Inverd Éireann and the government, but anyway.
No, the government, we met with Shane Ross, we met with Sean Canny, we met with Charlie McConnellogue, we met with Joe McHugh, we have backing.
Yes, no, I have no doubt about that at all. And most people listening, Mary, would be also of the view that we do need that Western
rail. Well, we need to get rid of the traffic congestion in Letterkenny. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you go now and fight on your way back to beautiful Inishowen. Holly Boner is Assistant Manager at the Base Enterprise Centre and is with me now. Excited to be here, I can just tell. right, we're talking about an event that's coming up. It's the Heart of Women's Festival. Mm-hmm. It's wellness, fitness, beauty, fashion, expert talks, a mini marathon, Femme and Fabulous Evening. It sounds absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. This is also too for women, isn't it? Right, you know, that give themselves something
absolutely
to enjoy.
So this idea came out of the Reekna Man is on that weekend anyway. It's an annual event. So we decided then to build a festival around it, just basically specifically for women. Women's health is something that we felt wasn't discussed enough or wasn't talked about enough. And so that's kind of where it started then.
And Féile Croí na mBan is the festival. It's the Heart of Women's Festival. It's in Jackson's Hotel Ballybuffet, Saturday the 28th of March and Sunday the 29th of March. So all on site, right?
Yes. So the first event is the health and wellbeing event. That's on the Saturday, on the 28th. It starts at 4 o'clock in Jackson's Hotel. So we have a whole host of speakers, expert speakers, coming to discuss things like menopause, endometriosis. We have representatives from Donegal Domestic Violence. We have counselling services. We just have things that we felt maybe people want to come into the one place.
And there's gaps there in those spaces.
Yeah.
And I think there's a kind of, and maybe I've been guilty of this myself, this notion that guys are really bad at looking after themselves and their health and going to the GP, and women are fantastic at it, right? Mm-hmm. But experience and years of sitting in this chair has made me realise that it's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And women can be overly brave sometimes, or they can make personal sacrifices to keep a family together, or whatever it might be. This is an opportunity for people to, I suppose, give themselves a bit of space to explore, you know, be it health, mental well-being, or whatever.
Absolutely. So a lot of women going through menopause or endometriosis are sometimes experiencing symptoms or experiencing different things going on in their life, and they're wondering, is this part of it? Is this what's wrong with me? Is this, you know, what is happening to me kind of thing? So we wanted every woman will go through the menopause of a certain, you know, when you reach a certain age, according to your body, you will go through the menopause. So this is going to affect everybody. And the lady that we have coming, Catherine O'Keefe. She is Ireland's first menopause coach. So she's going to talk about, you know, facts and myths.
Nutrition too is vital, and she's an expert in that space as well, isn't she?
We have a nutritionist coming as well to discuss gut nutrition, health nutrition and things like that. So they'll bounce off each other, you know, as far as learning about it and what you can do.
Yeah, and I like the fact too there's a Q&A element to it as well, and it's interactive, right? Because sometimes... you know, people might think, well, I was thinking about that, but that was never answered. So, you know, people aren't going to have to stand up and scream the question out themselves, right? But in other words, you've designed it so that the audience get the information that they feel is important to them. It's been designed like that.
Absolutely. So there will be a Q&A session with all of our speakers, but there's also an option after the event to come and speak to these speakers one-on-one if you didn't want to.
And I think it's important, again, from experience too, that people do not put down sometimes what they're feeling to menopause, because sometimes that can be problematic as well, and they go, oh, it must be menopause. And often it is, but sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. Sunday morning, I'd be giving this one a miss if I had the right bits and pieces. Sunday morning, there is a run.
Yes.
Are you doing that?
No.
Okay.
I will also be giving that a miss. Reach to Man as an annual event is run by XL Sports.
Okay.
So it's for all women, all ages, all abilities, and there's three different distances, a 5K, a 13K and a half marathon. So you can sign up online for that and everybody gets a t-shirt and a medal, and then there's refreshments afterwards.
Right. Now, the rest is going to be enjoyable, don't get me wrong, but the highlight, I would say, for me, if it were me, is Sunday evening.
Yes, absolutely. So that is my own baby. I own an aesthetics business in Balbofay, Rain Aesthetics. So this kind of, I had been at these events before and thought they were brilliant. They just bring everybody together. They're good crack. They're a bit of a laugh, and you get
There's Prosecco on arrival. People will know the kind of night they're in for then,
exactly.
You know, or afternoon tea. Marks and Spencer's, Sequin Cinderella. There's fashion shows featuring some of their products. There's going to be fashion talks. Emma Murray Stylist there. Beauty Talks by The Style Studio, Evan Walsh, G&G, Stress Management by Mary Bradley Wellness, and lots of local female businesses. So this is just to lean into it, right? Mm-hmm. Mickey Doherty is the MC on the night, and it sounds like it's going to be lots of fun, lots of stalls, goodie bags, all that type of stuff.
Exactly.
So are people booking for the weekend, or can they dip in and out, or what's the crack?
So there's different options. If you want to book for the weekend, there's an option for that on Eventbrite. There's also an option to book each individual event if you wanted to come to one or two, or not the whole lot, but there's a discount if you wanted to book the three. We also have a discount for if you wanted to stay in Jackson's Hotel for the weekend, so there's a discount for the Saturday night and also for the Sunday night.
And people have a bit of notice, this is on the 28th to the 29th of March inclusive, the Saturday and the Sunday. So
yes.
Jackson's are doing an overnight stay deal, are they?
Yes. Brilliant. Bed and breakfast for two people. Yeah,
lovely stuff. And there is all the details available where? I think I have it here. It's, well, Eventbrite, but where else can people go to find out what's on?
They can check out our Facebook page, which is Basic Twin Towns, and also my own page is Rain Aesthetics. So you can go on to either of those pages. There's some discount codes on there for tickets at the minute as well. The tickets are going really well, so we're delighted with that.
Like, and, you know, other halves too can say, I heard something on the radio, but it might be really nice for you. I'll look after the kids.
Exactly. If that could happen, that would be brilliant.
You can go and run a marathon. but you know what I mean? Sometimes people need a wee push as well too to say, no, you can do that. You can have a weekend. It's not a weekend. It is a weekend, but it's not. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Well, listen, well done. I hope it's a huge success for you.
Thank you.
And someone needs to organise this stuff for guys. You know, I don't think fellas get enough.
No, you know, the world's you're not the stacked first person
us.
To say that about
the world's
this.
Stacked against us. No, I'm only joking. Listen, well done. And
thank
as I
you.
Say, best of luck with that. So check out Base at...
Basic, B-A-S-I-C-C.
Okay, Basic...
Twin Towns on Facebook. Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Basic Twin Towns on Facebook. And you'll get the links there for Eventbrite as well, where you can pick and choose what you go to. You can go to the whole blooming lot if you like. And there's discounts and overnight stay incentives and all that jazz. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day, everybody.